Disc 2. What Breachin had said about being able to take Drail with one antler was true. Drail was old, nearly 11, and virtually lame now, and although he could still hold his own against many a young stag, he was no match for Breachin, the greatest fighter in the herd. Indeed, Breachin could have beaten Drail even in his prime, though it would have been a bloody business. Breachin had never had any ambitions towards the lordship of the herd, but recently he had been pushed further and further towards challenging Drail's authority. The organization of a deer herd is not especially complex. There may be up to 200 or 300 deer in a large herd like this one, grouped together in loose associations through family ties and friendships. The binding principle among the stags is the core, which every male deer must enter, paying allegiance to the lord of the herd. Alongside the core come the outriders, elite stags chosen for their strength and courage and usually natural loners. The outriders are scouts and fighters who look for new pastures and patrol for predators. The most important of the outriders are styled captain, like Breachin. These simple structures give the herd a strong unity, except in late spring when the deer's antlers fall and the herd's hierarchy is disrupted, and at Anlach, at the beginning of autumn, when the deer rut. The rut is the most important event in the deer's year, when the males fight for mates and settle scores. It is at this time, and this time only, that a stag may challenge for lordship, which normally happens once every 4 or 5 years. But Drail's lordship had not been challenged for over 6 years now. This was not because there was no stag strong enough to defeat him, but because a new system had been introduced into the herd. Through a network of invented titles and privileges, Drail had gathered together a close and loyal group of males from within the ranks of the corps. It acted both as bodyguard to Drail and as a kind of secret police, spying on the corps and the hinds and reporting any signs of discontent. It had been called the Drella, and was both resented and feared, but the most feared of all was its leader, Skorg, the Hornless Deer, or Hummel, as they are also called, who Breachin had spied with Drail earlier. Skorg was not a birth member of the herd, but had appeared just 3 summers before from over the northern hills. When he arrived asking for pasture, the young stag had been wounded in one eye by a wolf and had claimed to have lost touch with his home herd after the attack, but many dark rumors had already grown up around him. Some said he had a terrible secret, others that he had made a pact with the forest god and had been driven out of his own herd for treachery. Some even said that he had broken the oldest law of all and had spent time in the company of men. Whatever the truth, Skorg had rapidly won Drail's confidence and had now been promoted far beyond 7 years. Drail was aging fast, and as he became more and more lame, Skorg played on his fears of being ousted. It was Skorg who had come up with the notion of the Drella 2 seasons before, and he had personally masterminded its creation, choosing and grooming young stags himself, cleverly spying out the most discontented members of the corps and promoting them rapidly. Breachin had mistrusted Skorg from the outset, though he could see the young stag was very clever, and he had immediately opposed Skorg's entry into the herd. Subsequently, he had watched Skorg's activities with quiet disgust. But if Breachin had a weakness, it was that he was a soldier and outrider first, and preferred not to get involved in the politics of the home herd. It was not until Skorg had sought control of the outriders, too, that Breachin had shown open opposition. With the other captains, he had fought hoof and antler to stop Drail forcing members of the Drella on the outriders. Drail had responded by sending the outriders to roam farther and farther afield, on increasingly dangerous and unnecessary scouting expeditions. The outriders had lost 6 members since the spring. 1 had been taken by wolves, 3 killed by men, Two had vanished without trace, including Breachin's own brother Whitefoot. Meanwhile, Drayle's ambitions had grown with his power. His power base now stretched far beyond the herd itself, hence the newly invented title Lord of Herds, which Breachin had scoffed at in the glen. But the title represented far more than a name or the simple reflection of Drayle's vanity, for many of the red deer across the lowlands now recognized his authority, and before Anlac would come to pay him homage. The home herd was the largest red deer herd in the Great Land, and the Drella had won support from other lords by offering help against their own enemies. Drayle's methods had begun to spread like a virus, and his writ now ran as far north as the Great Mountain, and even to the edges of the High Land. Yet, to Breachin, the greatest threat posed by the Drella was within the herd itself, for the Drella stags were becoming increasingly aggressive. Apart from predators, starvation, and disease, the main causes of harm to a deer herd are wounds inflicted during the rut. But although stags will fight often, especially during the rut, their battles are mostly for show, and their encounters rarely result in any serious damage. A directly fatal injury is virtually unheard of, but that was beginning to change. The encounters were proving more and more ferocious, and Skorg had even begun to train the young stags to use their antlers in an entirely new way, to sharpen them on rocks and stones, and cut and jab with the points and to aim for vulnerable parts of the body. It meant that last autumn there had been far more injuries than normal, and one stag, who had been caught in a fight over a hind with two Drella, had even been killed. The habits of the hinds had also changed under Drea's lordship. His consuming desire for control had meant that the Drella had forced the females to live much closer to the stags. The herd had become much less mobile, and for three seasons now they had used the same home oak. Breachin did not approve of this, though he was strangely glad to be so close to Eloin. As Breachin climbed the hill, he heard a familiar voice in the darkness. It distracted him from his dark thoughts. Ahead of him, a group of yearlings were sitting in a circle in the grass, their spindly legs folded under them and listening, wide-eyed to an old deer addressing them. Most of them were around 9 months old and had stopped suckling, but they were not too old to listen to a good story.
"And so when the forest was young," the old stag was saying, "Starbuck stole the magic antlers from Herne and won a promise that forevermore the deer would roam as free as the wind."
It was Blindweed, the storyteller. "Spinning more of those old tales," Breachin chuckled to himself. He remembered many cold winter nights sitting at old Blindweed's feet, lapping up the stories of magic antlers, enchanted forests, and of Herne himself. The ancient stag seemed to have been no younger then. No one in the herd knew how old Blindweed really was. Some said he was 15, others even older. 8 is a good age for a red deer, and 13 about their natural span, but in exceptional circumstances they can live to as old as 20 and even older. You cannot, except in young deer, tell the precise age of a stag from his antlers, though the number of tines and their size is a good indication, for you find few royals below the age of 5 or 6. Blindweed had a fine head, with knobbly pearled antlers that rose to 14 points on his brow. But it was clear that they had gone back, as it is called, when they weaken, and would never be as strong as they had been in his prime.
"Well, that's quite enough for one long," said Blindweed suddenly. "Your mothers will be scolding me with the morning."
"But what happened to Starbuck?"
shouted an eager voice from the back. The fawns took up the cry.
"Yes, yes! How did he steal the antlers? Come on, Blindweed, tell us!"
The old deer chuckled to himself.
"Very well, but then to your mothers. Promise now."
"We promise!"
came the cry, except for the young fawn who had shouted out first. Blindweed gathered himself and began, as Breachin padded up behind them.
Well then, let me see. Yes. For days and days, Starbuck traveled through the forests, driven by wind and snow, hunted by fox and wolf, but he was always too quick for them. Then at last he passed through the great glen and entered Hun's Wood. He traveled on until he reached the clearing and saw Hearn himself lying by a briar, fast asleep. Above, hanging from the bough of an oak, were Hearn's antlers, which he always takes off when he rests. The young deer shuffled excitedly in the grass. Well, as you know, only Starbuck could tread lightly enough in the wood not to wake Hearn, and so very slowly he crept past the sleeping deer god, stood on the tips of his hooves, and with his muzzle plucked the antlers from the tree and put them on his own head. Blindweed paused portentously.
Yes, yes, and what happened then?
Shouted an eager fawn from the front.
Then there was a sudden thunderclap that shook the roots of the forest, and Hearn awoke.
The fawn nuzzled closer to the others.
When Hearn saw that his antlers were gone, he sprang to his feet and stomped his hooves and snorted, and his red eyes flamed, and he cried out in a great booming voice that made the branches shake. Who wakes the spirit of the forest? Who dares to steal Hearn's antlers? As you can imagine, even Starbuck was frightened by Hearn's anger, but he held his courage and answered coolly, It is I, Starbuck, the deer. I wear the antlers. Give them back, cried Hearn furiously, and with that he leapt on Starbuck. But Starbuck was wearing the magic antlers, and so, with a single spring, he jumped high over Hearn's head and landed far off at the edge of the clearing. Hearn turned, but he knew that as long as Starbuck had the antlers, he could never catch him. Then Hearn realized he was beaten. "What is it you seek?" asked Hearn in a gentler voice. "No more than you," answered brave Starbuck. "I seek antlers for the deer to protect them from Lyra. It is not much to ask, Lord Hearn, for we are Hearnling, yet we wander in the world with nothing to protect us but our senses and our speed." Well, Hearn thought for a time, and then he answered, "Very well, Starbuck. If you are sure that is what you want..." "I am sure," said Starbuck, and with that he took the antlers off and gave them back to the god. When Hearn had his horns back, he seemed terrible indeed, and he looked at Starbuck closely and said in a strange voice, "Starbuck, you are a brave and bold Hearnling, so I will grant your wish, though I could drive you from here like an autumn leaf tossed by the wind. But what you seek I will give only to such as you, foolish young stags who wish to fight. The hinds shall not be touched. Also, because you stole this prize from me, you shall have antlers with every season only, and each year they shall fall from your heads when the spring rains shower the earth and leave you bald and naked to be laughed at by every Lyra, until when the spring flowers have blossomed and summer is beginning to ripen, they will grow again like the branches on the trees, and I will tell you this. What you seek is full of danger, so be certain." Starbuck was so flushed with his victory that he hardly heard Hearn's warning, and assured the god that he was indeed certain. "Very well, then, Starbuck," said Hearn. "Go over to that oak. At its bottom, though the oak is barren with winter, you will see a single leaf. It grows all year round, for it is filled with Hearn's spirit. Eat it, Starbuck, and your wish shall be granted." So Starbuck approached the oak, and there he saw a single withered leaf, which looked dry and dead, though it was still on its stem. Gingerly he pulled at it, and it came away, and he stood there in Hearn's Wood, munching on the stem. It tasted bitter and earthly, like peat moss and burned bracken, and when Starbuck had finished, he stood around, blinking and waiting for something to happen.
As he did so, he realized that Hearn had vanished. "Tricked," said Stormbuck angrily, for nothing was happening. But suddenly, like the sound when the earth shakes, Hearn was speaking again, and his voice was all around. "Starbuck," he was saying, "your wish is granted, but because you stole this gift, the things you seek shall be both blessing and curse to Hurla. So tremble, Starbuck, and run." Starbuck felt a terrible pain in his head and saw blinding light, and he turned and bolted in terror. He hurtled back through the wood, the branches of the trees tearing at his sides and haunches, his face scratched and bruised, and all along he was driven by the agonizing pain as though his head would burst open. He thought he must run on forever as the trees lashed past him. But at last the pain began to subside, and Starbuck broke clear of Hearn's wood and came to a stop in the sunlight by a clear pool. There the exhausted Starbuck reached down to drink, and as he did so, he saw his reflection in the water. His face was scratched and bruised by his flight, his clear eyes blinking in the day, and on his head were a pair of mighty antlers, vaster than any deer has known. And that is how the brave Starbuck won horns for the Hurla. The assembled fawns were silent, their young mouths hanging open with amazement. "So," said Blindweed in a cheerful voice that broke the spell, "which young fawn can tell why Hearn's gift was both blessing and curse?" The young deer looked back and forth to each other wonderingly. "Come now, there must be one of you. Whatever do they teach you nowadays?" Suddenly the calves turned their heads, startled by a voice that sang out from the back. "The antlers of Hearnling are blessing and curse, for they mean we must fight for the chance to be first. Though they help us protect both the herd and each other, at the time of Anlock we must fight one another." "Captain Bracian," said the startled storyteller, "I didn't see you there." "Forgive me, Blindweed," replied Breachin as he entered the circle, "but I couldn't help listening. You still tell a fine tale." Blindweed was delighted. "Fawns," said the old deer, remembering himself, "have you forgotten your manners? Welcome, Captain Breachin, the bravest of the outriders." Most of the fawns were too overawed to do anything at all. "Sit still, little ones, and don't let me disturb you further, Blindweed," said Breachin. "I have stayed too long already. Continue your story." "No, Captain," replied Blindweed with a mixture of embarrassment and pride. "It's very late, and if we sit here talking, how will they ever grow up to be brave outriders? Come now, be off with you." At this, some of the cows began to grumble, and the young fawn at the back shouted out,
"Tell us another story, Blindweed. Tell us about the first stone."
"Yes,"
said another.
Now, I'll tell you tomorrow, I promise."
"Tell us about Willow, the mother of hinds. Tell us the prophecy, Blindweed,"
said the fawn that had spoken first. His name was Lysham. The fawns took up his cry.
"Yes, the prophecy. Tell us the prophecy."
"Silence," snapped Blindweed angrily. "The prophecy is no mere fable to be fed to young fawns. It is part of the lore. Now stop being foolish."
"I bet Captain Breachin wants to hear it," said Lychin boldly. "Go on, Blindweed."
"I'll muzzle you if you don't be quiet," said Blindweed furiously. "Captain Breachin has much more important things to do than listen to a lot of little softfoots and an old storyteller." But the calves weren't listening to Blindweed. They were looking up at Breachin.
"Please, Captain Breachin, sir," said Leachin in a bold voice. "You want to hear it, don't you?"
Breachin looked down at the calf, and his heart was suddenly pierced with worry for a loin, but he smiled. "If Blindweed will tell it," he said, "I would be honored."
"Hooray!"
shouted the fawns delightedly.
Go on, Blindweed. Tell it. The prophecy. The prophecy.
Very well, said Blindweed irritably. If the captain insists, but silence all of you. This is not for fooling.